Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This is On Point. I'm Robert Siegel. Two new studies published this week could have huge implications for the future of breast cancer treatment. The first showed that many women with early stage breast cancer who would normally be candidates for chemotherapy don't actually need it. And the second used immunotherapy to completely eliminate cancer from a patient with an untreatable advanced stage form of the disease. You can join the conversation. Does this all sound too good to be true? If you could fight cancer without chemotherapy, would you? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. And joining me now from Washington, D.C. is Dr. Ned Sharpless, the director of the National Cancer Institute at the National Institutes of Health. The NCI funded the chemotherapy study and the clinical trial group, and an NCI physician scientist and his team developed the immunotherapy study. Dr. Ned Sharpless, welcome to On Point.
Great. Thank you for having me. Good to be here today.
First, the chemo study. How many cases were studied and what did you learn from them?
So this was a large trial that started a while ago. It's been going on for about 15, 14 years of 6,700 women. Well, actually, I think there were 10,000 enrolled and 6,700 actually became in the experimental group, if you will. And a portion of the women got randomized to traditional therapy, which would include chemotherapy. And by that, I mean cytotoxic drugs that cause some of the side effects that are associated with cancer therapy, like hair loss and myelosuppression. And then the other group got endocrine therapy. Everybody got endocrine therapy, but one group got chemotherapy plus endocrine, and the other group got endocrine alone. And by endocrine therapy, I mean drugs like tamoxifen that mm-hmm. block the hormone process. And these were all cancers that were thought to be hormone receptor mm-hmm. positive. And importantly, this group was identified among hormone receptor positive patients by using a genetic test. So there was an RNA score that identified sort of roughly half the patients or slightly more than that who were appropriate for this study. And we'd known for a long time that so-called adjuvant therapy, so people who got their surgery to remove their breast cancer and then were treated with chemotherapy and tamoxifen or drugs like that after treatment, adjuvant meaning after treatment, were helped by that. That was a beneficial thing to do. And so this trial really asked the question, could you give less than that? Could you de-escalate therapy and mm-hmm. give just hormone therapy alone without the chemotherapy?
And the answer was yes, I gather, is what you found.
It's a non-inferiority trial, so it's resoundingly non-inferior, meaning yeah. that giving chemotherapy didn't seem to help this group. So there are still some patients with higher-grade breast cancer where we believe adjuvant chemotherapy will work, but the majority of patients with hormone receptor-positive breast cancer and a lower one of these genetic risk scores will appear to do just fine with the endocrine therapy alone.
Now, to have had that many women who were not getting the additional therapy implies that you obviously had serious questions about the efficacy of adding that. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been. I mean, I can't imagine that you would have deprived thousands of women of a therapy that you were confident was actually adding to their recovery.
Right. Well, this is always the complexity of a de-escalation trial. You know, we have a therapy that we know helps people. We know adjuvant therapy from the 1980s and 90s was a good thing to give these large groups of patients. But we didn't really know within the specific bins. You know, when you talk about a specific individual patient, it was clear that some patients benefited more than others. And so what's really remarkable about this study is we now have a way to tell who's got the certain kind of hormone receptor positive breast cancer that doesn't need chemotherapy versus who has the kind that does. And this is, you know, as we want to take effective regimens and give less therapy in the future, that this is a problem we have over and over again, is how do you take something that works but has toxicity and make it better in that you can reduce the toxicity with less therapy. So it's a recurring problem in oncology.
Now, before we talk about the immunotherapy story, which is quite remarkable, I wanted to hear from a listener. If we go to line one, Amy is calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Amy, welcome to On Point.
Hi. I'm 51 years old, and I was recently diagnosed in March with breast cancer. And I was able to have the MammaPrint done, the MammaPrint test, and my test came back at 97.2% that the breast cancer would not return, with the option to choose between having chemotherapy or not having it. And because of those results, I chose not to have chemotherapy and just to go through the radiation. I will start radiation next week. Mm-hmm. And I pretty much figured that the side effects from chemotherapy were worse than just going through the radiation and having the tamoxifen after radiation. So I would like to also thank all the women who went through the clinical trial to have this test available and have this information available for people like me. So I appreciate it, and I'm so glad that you guys are doing the show on this today, because I made my decision a week and a half before this past weekend, when all of the studies and all the articles had come out. Obviously, the studies were done, but before all the articles came out, I made my decision before that. And with all the articles coming out this weekend, it had helped me to it helped me feel better about my decision. I had two doctors, one doctor who said no chemotherapy and one doctor who said absolutely all my patients go through chemotherapy. Mm. And I was trying to figure out the best route. And right now I feel that I have made the best route for my body.
Amy, thank you very much for calling and talking about that with us. And Dr. Sharp, do you find that Amy's reaction is typical? I mean, chemotherapy is notoriously unpleasant. Do people typically say, good, I don't have to take it, I won't? Or do people say, I'd rather go for the belt and suspenders approach here, and, you know, I don't want to take the risk no matter what the research shows?
Yeah, I think every patient's different, and you have to talk to them about what level of risk they're willing to accept in their care and how, you know, what level of certainty they want, because every patient is their own sort of complex story. But I think this, you know, Amy's story's fairly typical. This is exactly the kind of patient that this trial was aimed to study, of these early stage breast cancers who are, you know, treated with surgery and radiation and then tamoxifen afterward. And the question is, do you get much else by adding more toxic medicines? And I think, you know, the TAILOR-X trial, the trial we're discussing today, suggests that a lot of these patients don't need chemotherapy, that they will do just fine with the less aggressive therapy. And as you say, the side effects of cytotoxic chemotherapy are really significant. Yeah. They are unpleasant, you know, tired all the time, losing your hair, damage to the bone marrow, and risk of infection. So they are more than just unpleasant. They're actually dangerous. And therefore, we really want to try and identify the patients who benefit from those drugs and just use tamoxifen only when we can. And so I think that Amy's decision sounds like it was a good one, and she can feel much better about it today because of the results of the TAILOR-X trial.
I want to ask you also about the immunotherapy study that was done by a team at the National Cancer Institute. Judy Perkins told NPR on Monday about how she was ready to give up fighting metastatic breast cancer, and then she heard about a new kind of experimental immunotherapy.
I'm one of the lucky ones that, you know, he hit the nail on the head. We got the right T cells in the right place at the right time, and they went in and ate up all my cancer, and I'm cured. It's freaking unreal. It's amazing.
Is she one of the lucky ones, or is she the one lucky one that we know about so far?
I don't think she's the only one. This story's moving pretty fast, but it is, I think, gotten beyond the stage of sole anecdote and now to more single institution experience. So let me put these two in perspective. The first trial we talked about was thousands of women, is practice changing. It's going to lead to different therapy for women with early stage breast cancer, from here on. The second one, this study, the immunotherapy study, was about one patient, but is based on an experience of a larger number of patients treated at the National Cancer Institute, and is at the real cutting edge of cancer therapy and is almost science fiction. I mean, when you describe how this works, we take the patient's own lymphocytes, their own so-called T cells, and grow them outside of the patient's body, and then screen them for which ones recognize the patient's tumor and which ones don't. Pick those sort of successful T cells that seem to be the best at fighting the cancer, grow them up some more, and then reinfuse them into the patient to the tune of like 80 billion cells. And then and that works. The patient will then sometimes, if we get the right T cells, right, we'll have a marvelous response, as is the case here. So it's you know, for some patients who've exhausted all of their options and there's no standard therapy, this kind of experimental therapy can be helpful.
And this was a metastatic cancer that was cured, I guess, can be used in that word, no?
Well, too soon to say. I mean, people can still relapse after T-cell therapy at some point. So we would say a very, very, very good remission that hopefully will last a very, very long time. But I think the point you made is that it's this is a metastatic, a bad, solid tumor. These are the kinds of things that, you know, most people in the United States who die of cancer die of these solid cancers, breast cancer, lung cancer, colon cancer, that are metastatic, that stop, where we have therapies that may work initially, but they stop working. So they become so-called refractory to all other therapies. And this is the problem that most people who die of cancer face before that happens. And so, you know, this is someone who had exhausted all options and normally perhaps would have considered hospice or a different experimental therapy, but in this case was able to get enrolled on this remarkable trial and derive benefit from it. It's important to say, though, that the majority of patients that we treat with these kinds of experimental T-cell therapies for solid tumors still don't benefit from it. So we don't know exactly how to make it work in everybody. When it works, it works. When it doesn't work, we don't exactly know why. So we need more experience with this therapy. It clearly needs more research. It needs to be replicated and done at other centers beyond just the Seoul Institution. So there's still a long way to go.
Joining us now is Kate, who's calling from Frederick, Maryland. Welcome to the program, Kate.
Hi, Robert.
Hi.
I'm so happy for Judy Perkins. What a wonderful story. And I'm in a similar position to her prior to that treatment. I have stage 4 breast cancer. I've had it for quite a while. It's pretty slow growing. It's hormone receptor positive, HER2 negative. And I'm doing the succession of current treatments, and they're holding it at bay. And I'm interested in hearing more about how, if there's anything on the market right now that is immunotherapy focused, or if there are any trials that I could apply to.
Dr. Sharpless?
Sure. I think there has been tremendous interest in immunotherapy in advanced breast cancer, and I'm sorry to hear about Kate's story. It sounds like she is, doing for the moment in this stage where she has treatments that are working, but is worried about the problem of what happens when those treatments stop working. And we believe in many patients with metastatic breast cancer or even hormone receptor positive indolent disease, at some point, our therapies will for most patients stop working. So I think, you know, thinking about the future and what trial would come next is an appropriate question for Kate. But the problem has been immunotherapy breast cancer, hormone receptor positive breast cancers, has been immunologically colder. What I mean by that is that the immune system doesn't seem to recognize it as well as it does other kinds of cancer like melanoma or lung cancer. And so these colder tumors have had we've had less success treating them immunologically with the so-called checkpoint inhibitor drugs that are FDA approved for these other kinds of cancer. And so we've been spent a lot of time trying to make those kinds of immunotherapy work in breast cancer. And there are still a number of ongoing trials related to breast cancer and immunotherapy that we could tell Kate about.
Just to give some context here, though, if you consider the whole range of different cancers that are studied at the Institute, for example, is this immunotherapy example of dealing with breast cancer, are we at the forefront there among treating all various kinds of cancers?
Yeah, so I think that's the important point about this study is that this is an immunologically cold tumor, but we figured out, or Dr. Rosenberg and his group at the NCI figured out how to still get a pretty good immune response to it by selectively identifying the specific T cells of interest. But it's a lot more work. So those other therapies are basically an antibody one can infuse to the patient. It's a relatively easy and straightforward therapy to give. Whereas this therapy requires, you know, genetic manipulation of cell or manipulation of cells outside the patient's body and then reinfusion, and it's a lot more complicated. It is truly personalized therapy. This therapy that, you know, on these cell-based therapies will work for one individual, and that's the individual who donates the T cells. So it is a much more complicated endeavor, and one hopes there would be an easier way to make these sorts of immunologically cold tumors susceptible to immune clearance, rather than having to do this in the majority of patients. But we still don't know how to do that. These are active research questions in cancer right now.
We have time for another call. This is Jack, who is calling from Miami. Hi, Jack. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Robert.
Hi.
So my question revolves around just what are the basic differences to what chemotherapy and what immunotherapy are doing to your body? I hear there's terms tossed around a lot, but I don't know what the differences are. Thank you.
And it'll have to be the short version. I'm sorry, Ned Sharpless. Yeah. The amount of time left. You explained what the immunotherapy is doing by breeding your best T cells imaginable to go after it. Chemotherapy?
Yeah, maybe I can do a semester of medical school in like a minute. chemotherapy, when we mean by that is cytotoxic chemotherapy, are usually drugs that damage DNA. So they break the molecule of life, DNA, and that causes certain cells to then die. They understand that broken DNA is something they shouldn't have, and they'll die. And many cancers will respond appropriately and die in response to chemotherapy. Immunotherapy riles up the immune system. It makes cells like T cells, you know, fight the cancer the way you would fight off an infection.
You did it. I think in less than a minute, you've conferred degrees on people out there in that time. Thank you very much. It's nice to hear good news about fighting cancer, Dr. Sharpless. Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Ned Sharpless is director of the National Cancer Institute at the National Institutes of Health. He joined us from the NIH campus in Bethesda, Maryland. And you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can also follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. On Point is produced by Anna Bauman, Brian Hardzinski, Eileen Imada, Stefano Katsonis, Allison Poli, Catherine Proctor, Jeremy Rolosa, James Ross, Gretchen Voss, and Miriam Wasser, with help from Carolyn Anders. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. Here on a brief break from my retirement, I'm Robert Siegel, and this is On Point.